Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Hey, Sox fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, this is episode 263. I am Nick Borowski, and this is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. As always, Pat Hester with me, and our Chicago White Sox added another ex-Kansas City Royal.
This podcast was, put together by you. You're the chairman, CEO of this, and you named this after the slogan in the 90s, good guys wear black, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So I looked up just before the show, I Googled some of the Royals in the 90s marketing slogans, and I thought we could change our name to or something of that. So if we don't think of something today, our listeners, please tweet at us or put it in the chat if you're listening live. Maybe some ideas for changes to this podcast. 1990, the Royals, their marketing slogan was catch the thrill. Did we do anything with catch the thrill? Maybe. So we'll workshop it. 1991, turn on the good times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Turn on the good times. We could do something with that. Turn on the good times. With Pat, Nick, I don't know what it could be. 1992, it's here.
Ooh, man, that's ominous. That almost like feels like there's actually something good that's going to happen. But okay, it's not a bad one.
Okay, 1993. This is all Kansas City Royals marketing slogans through the early 90s. 1993, catch all the action.
That's it. That's it right there.
That's it.
Catch all the action. I'm liking that so far.
And I'll give you 1994 for the fun of it all.
For the fun of it all. Man, because that's what I think they're going to try to sell is come on out to the ballpark and have a good time, have some drinks, have some laughs, forget about what's happening with this team, just embrace the nostalgia, the feeling of baseball being back. Just have some fun once in your life. That's probably where they're going with it.
So yeah. I'll stop there. That was 1990 through 1994. Again, as we continue to morph into the Kansas City Royals, I thought maybe that it's time that we squash Good Guys Talk Back, maybe everything black and white about our podcast and our wardrobe, and just transition into that royal blue and change the name of this podcast to something that would emulate the early 90s marketing slogans of the Royals. My second thing I want to just, again, very briefly get off my chest. Did you make the 108 tournament, Nick?
I didn't make the 108. Oh, my goodness. 2 years in a row. And I didn't. I'm absolutely crushed.
I can tell by the tone in your voice. I can't find where the hell the brackets are. You'd think the gentleman that put this together would put it on, like they tweet it out and have images of all the brackets. So I'm assuming I didn't make it. Looks like I've been forgotten again, just like on the island of misfit toys.
Well, here's the thing, Pat. Have you gone to Lawrence's Shrimp Shack? Have you bought enough shrimp? You might not have bought enough shrimp. You've got to patron some of these sponsors, you got to get over to Punky's and Lawrence's Shrimp. Have you been watching? Do you watch their
program? No, I didn't watch I didn't watch the 3 hour telethon that they do as a podcast there. God bless those guys. They do great work.
Yeah.
So neither one of us get in. I'm assuming I didn't get in. I can't find it anywhere. So it is what it is, Nick. I think you and I maybe create our own tournament, an NIT version of the podcast wars here, the Twitter wars here, and do something of our own. All the folks that didn't make it, maybe we'll just take the rest.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if I don't have to spend any more time on social media, then I'm in better shape for it, to be honest.
You don't want to do more is what you're saying.
It's a beast. You got to play the game. You got to promote stuff and I get it. And I do like engaging with other, like-minded Sox fans. There's some great stuff and I've met some wonderful people, but usually social media, it's not the best place to be able to have well thought out conversations. But my man, Ian Eskridge, he's got a tough first round battle. Ian does amazing work. Mm-hmm. was doing it for White Sox Daily and now transitioned over to Future Sox, where I am a contributor, and he's got a tough first round. But Ian is a very smart, smart baseball mind. I love the work that he does, and he has got my vote 100%.
Well, God bless him. Good luck to him, and good luck to everybody else that made it in the tournament. You guys, you and I will.
It's fun. You know, people have a blast with it, and it's kind of something that they get into. With my lifestyle, you know, I've talked about this. Not that I want to take this off the rails, but man, I'm coming up on 5.5 years dry, clean, sober, and that's very difficult for me to still navigate getting into content creation where I think alcohol is so celebrated. It's just not something I can do anymore. You know, my friend, are
one of the most creative people I've ever met in my life.
Oh, thank
you. I mean, the posts in cemeteries that you do, the videos, I mean, that would get a lot of votes.
Yeah. I'm sure I could figure something out, but I just from observing this for several years, you know, and I get it. I totally get it. And I was there, man, years ago. Oh, where was this 10 years ago? I'd be dead, you know, creating content where, you know, I'm drinking a case of beer while, you know, it's just, it's not, I can't live that type of lifestyle. And hey, there's some people that are doing some fun stuff. I give their livers the blessing. Hopefully they get through it. And you know, people do have fun with it, and it's something to kind of walk you into opening day. You know, you talked about the Royals, Pat, at the beginning, and, you know, Luke jumped in, which I appreciate right away with the Brad Keller stuff. And wow, that was kind of surprising to me based on, you know, his just the relationship he's had with White Sox now, namely Tim Anderson, who is, of course, gone. Keller, you know, I wouldn't really say, oh, that's an arm we've got to have. Like, really, let's really take a flyer. I don't know. It's because of, you know, Kopech not being able to throw strikes in the first inning, and we've got to bolster starting options. And then it's the running joke, of course, with another like former Royal is coming in, but we know it, you know, and Vinny Duber wrote an article for CHGO, and it's obvious. I mean, you surround yourself with people and personnel that you know from your past life. When you're brand new in a position, wherever it is, and you're given maybe carte blanche to hire, who do you want to hire to surround yourself and give yourself some comfort? And well, you look to your past, you know, and if Getz was with the, you know, Braves or the Rays or Dodgers, I mean, we probably would never get an opportunity to have Getz, but you know, if he was, then we might be having different former players, and it just happens that he's got the experience and Grifol, you know. So I get while it's happening, it's just maddening that it happens to be the Royals, which isn't really the prototypical team that you want to kind of follow right now.
If the White Sox were a normal, like a business every day where people go to work, this would be an HR problem. Right. Because you just, it really would be. It would be an HR. You're only hiring the same person as you are. I mean, that's ridiculous. I wonder, you tell me which one it is now. As this continues to happen, has the influx of Royals, ex-Royals into the White Sox organization, is it still funny? Is it curious? Or is it scary?
Ooh, I think it's curious to me because I'm curious of who else is going to come through. You know, are they going to talk to Eric Osmer and say, you might have a couple more years left in you? I know you hung it up, but look what we're building over here. All your friends are here. You know, we've got the Moose Man and, you know, now Brad Keller. And, you know, we're going to talk to Gordon, see if he wants to come back. Salvi is on his way. It just didn't happen quite yet, but he'll be here soon. I it's more curious. I mean, it was funny at the beginning, but then you understand what's happening, and it, I don't want to say it's unfortunate. It's just, you know, you get it. I think if you get it, and it's because it's the Royals that makes it kind of unfortunate. Nothing against, you know, Kansas City. I feel like they might be excited about the position they're in. Maybe they're on the up and up. I don't know. You know, maybe we'll talk to some Royals, you know, content creators, some Royal fans, you know, coming up, and just out of curiosity, you know. But I wonder what Kansas City fans think of like the White Sox, like, really? Wow, we dodged a bullet there. Look what's going on with them. I don't know that.
I doubt another fan base really looks at it and goes, look, you know, because they're not as close to the situation as we are on a day in and day out basis. I'd be surprised if the regular Royal fan notices what's going on up here with the influx of ex players that they have. But I find it, and I just wrote it down because I feel like when I wrote these three words down, funny, curious, scary, that's kind of where I feel like I've evolved to. When it first started happening, it was kind of funny. It was like, okay, that it's funny. And then it was like, I'm like, you got the raised eyebrow a little bit, the Michael Keaton eyebrow way up, pointed up in the air. And now it's turned into this, like, this is really kind of scary, because if this is all that you can do and all that you know, or you're all you're allowed to do, what does that bode for the next? Because Chris Getz will be the general manager of this team for a long time. Let's be honest with ourselves. Unless new ownership comes in and the team sells, or Jerry, God forbid, passes away, until something changes, Chris Getz will probably be the last general manager Jerry has. So it's going to be a while. And if this is the way it goes, and you're just bringing in guys that are hanging on to the last couple good years of their career, or maybe past their prime, or trying to make it again in the big leagues, you know, because you mentioned Salvador Perez, and he's coming, right? He's going to be well past his prime at that point.
That would
also fit the White Sox narrative of what they've been for their, you know, since you and I have been fans. Let's bring in the guy, maybe lightning the bottle, the Ken Griffey Juniors of the world, the Andrew Ramirez Joneses of the world, all those guys that had no business playing baseball anymore. But I digress. I know you had
a skeletal outline, but this was definitely part of it. You bring up some good points, and there's some awesome stuff in the chat. I mean, Zach Greinke is looking for a team. I don't think he's done. Like, well, then what's stopping you from just bringing Zach Greinke in?
Would Hawk come out of retirement to come and call a game if Zach Greinke was starting a pitcher? He loves Zach Greinke.
Yeah, I need some more Hawk. I need Hawk to just jump in every now and then. I need him every now and then. Just a weekend series would be great, just to see how that dynamic would work with Triffin and with Stone. Because I would like the three-headed monster, three-person booth would be outstanding. Just to see how much time Triffin actually gets, if Hawk steamrolls and just dominates absolutely everything. But, you know, I think the scary part, Pat, in my mind as a Sox fan, is if this is a long-term trend, if Getz always has to, like, lean on the Royals as a crutch moving forward because he's not comfortable of going outside of the box or listening to other people that are around him, hopefully, you know, anti-Royals like Barfield or Bannister, and saying, look, you know, what's out there? What's the direction? What's the team? What's the, you know, what's the identity we're trying to create here? I think right now in his first year, it's all about, you know, who am I familiar with? You know, and there's maybe a fear of making a mistake, or so I'm going with people that I kind of trust and then I want to surround myself with. But moving forward after this year, it better not be that way. You better not be signing guys for just, you know, a 1 year thing, you know, a 1 year deal, guys that are fighting for their lives. That's not the type of White Sox team I want to build. I'm concerned beyond this year, and I want to gauge your excitement level, but beyond this year, I'm really thinking 2025 and 2026 of who's going to help this team pass this year. You know, how are we building? Is Pedro Grifol really the guy? You know, I hope not, but I think he's going to live out his contract. I think he's got another year after this. And so I think Getz will be around longer than Grifol for sure. So what do they do with Grifol? Do they extend him and say, you know, we really think you're the guy. We want you to be the guy, even when this team is competitive and we think we can make a run and we've added some pieces and the young guys have matured and are up. Those are interesting things to watch.
What did Pedro get for a contract? Is it known what he got?
I don't know. I'm sure it was cheap. You know, I think it was 3 years, and it was a very, like, you know, I think it had to be an entry level basic contract. I mean,
if you look at what, and I hate to always draw the comparison, but it just seems sometimes two alike. If you draw the comparisons to what the Bears did, you know, bringing in Matt Eberflus, and it's like everybody looked at that first year Matt Eberflus had as a throwaway year because it didn't really count. They were tearing down the team, and then you move on. You can't really hold that against him. Can you draw the similar conclusion to Pedro and say the team was a dysfunctional mess from what was built? The general manager and the VP of baseball ops both got fired. The manager wasn't really, even though they're aligned, wasn't a Getz hire. It was a Rick Hahn hire. So do you give him the opportunity to reset? And then you go, now we're entering in year two, which is more like a year one for Pedro. And if he's got next year only on his contract, we really don't want a lame duck manager. So let's do what this organization and I think the Bulls organization has done, do these like silent extensions. Like, okay, let's extend him another year so he's not going into next year when we think that maybe we can be more competitive as a lame duck manager.
That's possible because, you know, I don't think Jerry wants to pay a manager two managers. I don't think he's going to want to pay a manager, you know, that's not around. And then whatever new guy they bring in, I mean, I'm almost, you know, convinced that Pedro Grifol's hire was Getz influenced, you know, Getz from the Royals organization talked him up. And maybe it wasn't even Hahn's thought or idea. Maybe Hahn, you know, missed out on back-to-back managers, missed out because he didn't hire La Russa, that's for sure. And he didn't bring in Pedro Grifol, really, because that was Getz. And Jerry has talked so highly of Getz, which, again, why he got just catapulted into the general manager position. So the way that they talk about, like, that connection there, Grifol Getz, you might be onto something, Pat. And then that leads me back to the scary part of your three-part question, because I just don't believe he's the right guy. And we've got some interesting quotes, which, you know, I always have no shortage of Grifol quotes.
Well, now it's time, like you're getting baseball stuff every day. So you've got to have just an overflow. Your cup runneth over with Pedro Grifol.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Quotes. And I look for you to jump over that dugout this week and stick the phone and record some things if you can while you're in Arizona.
Absolutely. So Sox, as we record here and talk on Saturday morning, March 9th, Sox are 4-11 in Cactus League play. They play San Diego later today. Mike Soroka on the hill, who, you know, vying for that starting rotation spot. We have yet to really have that starting rotation materialize. You know, it sounds like we'll get into some of that, but, you know, Crochet's fighting for a spot. You got Flexen in there. I think Fetty is a lock, of course, for the money that they gave him and everything, but Soroka and even Kopech. But Sox are second to last in Cactus League play. And get this, Pat, here. They have a minus 36 run differential. Minus 36, which is by far the worst in all of spring training action. Grapefruit League, Cactus League, put them together. There is nobody close to a minus 36 run diff. We've all talked about how offense, you know, it's tough in spring training, but there's also some like black holes in this lineup, and there's been some quiet spring trainings from some folks while others have excelled like Aloy. Man, there's been, you know, they were close to getting no hit this past week as two games were televised that I had watched. Obviously they're playing just about every day, but offense has been a major issue.
Yeah. And run differential, if you recall, and I can't remember exactly what episode it was, but you and I talked, I think it was early in the winter, right? Or early in the off season when we were reviewing, it was probably right after the season had ended or sometime after that. We were talking about, you know, it was our Halloween episode. What stats scared us? I remember this. And I talked about our run differential from last year and how much it frightened me almost to my death. And now that we're and again, it you do have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt
when you're
talking run diff in spring training, but it's
just facts. Also, I'm just giving you the facts right here.
Then that's why you're a professional journalist and reporter, because you only give the facts.
Oh,
but
sure.
It's not trending in a great direction, and it doesn't give you a lot of hope that it's going to not change as the season gets going. So the holes in the lineup are one thing, but when you have the guys that you really need to count on to actually produce and they're not producing, that's what you're going to get. And when you have maybe only two really bona fide, and I say two very loosely, starters, you're going to have if it continues this way, you may have a worse run diff than you had last year, which I believe was minus, oh gosh, it was minus triple digits, if I remember correctly, something crazy like that. But it was awful. So,
I remember years ago, this was the 2021 season. You and I had the great Herb Lawrence on, and we were talking about, I think it was maybe even early in the season, and the Sox were scuffling a little bit in terms of record, and they were chasing one or two teams in the AL Central. And we were, we knew what kind of lineup, we knew what kind of pitching, we felt as Sox fans pretty confident, but we were hoping a little bit quicker out of the box here. And we talked to Herb Lawrence about that, and Herb went right to run diff. He's like, look at, I think it was maybe Minnesota that was ahead of us, or Cleveland, maybe even Detroit, and was like, look at their run diff. I just don't think that is going to, cut it. And I don't think they're going to be able to stay on top of this division, where the Sox, I think, are going to come storming, and they eventually did. I mean, it's, any stat, if you just focus on that one stat, that one metric solely, whatever that is, you might build it up a little too much, but I think run diff is a good thing to just, pay attention to. And to your point, man, this is where I struggle with, can the 2024 Sox be competitive even in this division? It's the pitching. I mean, the pitching has got to be more than just solid. I mean, yeah, it's got to shoulder a lot, because I think of a softer offense.
Yeah. And the reason why I always, one, there's a couple reasons why I like run differential in terms of looking at it as a stat. One, it's very simple for me to understand. It's not that complicated. You can figure it out. Number two, traditionally, the teams that are making the playoffs year in and year out are their tops in baseball in terms of run differential. So it's a great barometer in terms of, who's making the playoffs and who's not. Just look at the run differential. So anyway,
yeah,
it's not a good look, although there is some positives that have happened in White Sox camp thus far. And you had mentioned Aloy, and that's fantastic. But I heard the great Jesse Rogers on ESPN Chicago, I think it was yesterday, saying you don't want to be this hot because it's unsustainable as you start the season. So, I wouldn't, though it's wonderful to see the slash line, and he hit a bomb against the Dodgers. I think it was maybe his only home run so far. That will not be sustainable as the season starts. So maybe just sit him the rest of and keep him healthy.
I mean, they might, they've sat Robert Jr. and Benintendi this past week, more for weather conditions. The field was just really sloppy. They had some rain, and you want to just obviously be careful with those guys. And I don't think there's anybody that you want to be more careful with than Aloy, maybe Yoan Moncada, but 520 average, OPS over 1200. He is, Jimenez is two off the lead, along with Paul DeJong, in terms of RBI leaders for, spring training. And Lopez having another good year stats-wise, and hot right now. And so, yeah, I get that. I totally get that. But I think there's something to be said, though. If you found a groove, the way he changed up his batting stance and his hands are a little higher, and he was a featured conversation by Chuck in the dugout. Those are always fun interviews where Chuck's poking his head kind of in the dugout, holding the microphone out to people. And Aloy gives, interesting interviews, just kind of not wants to be very committal, and he's just like, hey, I don't blame him, because I just want to be healthy. We'll see. Yep. We'll see if I'm healthy. He's got his hopes and dreams, which makes sense if he could stay healthy. He's having fun right now. He's hitting the ball. But if you found a new stance and you were locked in, I don't know if that falls off, though, once the season starts. Mm-hmm. But if you factor in colder weather and all these other things, maybe there's an adjustment. But if you are like, hey, I've got a new approach.
Yeah.
And you're not trying to find something still when actual games start. If you know what you're doing and it's more of just, you know, I'm looking for pitch selection. I'm trying to get to know different pitchers and what they've got and what they're going to do against me. Maybe that, I don't want to say it's anything's going to be easier, but when you're trying to fight two battles of, I don't feel comfortable, plus I'm going against, you know, a variety of different pitches at the big league level. This isn't just arms people are throwing out in spring training. That's difficult. So he might have that one thing figured out of like, hey, this is my stance. You know, this is my approach. This is like, and that's, that, that's, it's exciting, you know, to,
I'd like to know if he has learned how to stretch his body.
Well, I hope they all have learned that.
Are your, let me ask you this question, Aloy, are your hamstrings currently as tight as piano strings? Because if they are, then we need to work on that. I know your hands are great, but let's,
what's your relationship with the large rubber bands? I want, when I go to spring training to the facility, I just want to see buckets of large rubber bands, you know, all over the place. Everybody's using large rubber bands. They're stretching everything out. I, you know, my videos, my, my photos will be of stretching. I will make sure, like, just, and I'll be timing it. How long before the game? How long are they stretching? Are they buddy stretching? Are they solo stretching? You know, because we've all seen those solo stretchers that just kind of like, you know, a couple toe taps and then they do a light jog, you know, along the foul line. Like, come on, man. You know,
stretch it out.
Stretch it out.
I have an assignment for you then. You're going on this trip with your lovely wife and, and your beautiful son. I want a 3-to-1 ratio in terms of pictures of you and the family to stretching. Stretching be the 3, family pictures the 1.
That's not a problem. Can you handle that? I can handle that. I'll also be focused. It looks like Danny Mendick is transitioning from my mind, from beard into mustache. I've been kind of noticing what's going on there. And with Dylan Cease no longer a mustache wearer, a beard wearer, I need Danny Mendick. I need that mustache. So I'll be, you'll see some of those.
Will there be a picture of you and Danny Mendick together?
I hope.
That may break Twitter.
If he's got his mustache right. Oh, absolutely. That could be my new profile.
And then if he wants to take a picture of you, will you assess,
he might ask me
and say, it's not right, man. We can't do this.
We might compare. Before we go a little further here, and I want to talk about some of the cuts and the Oscar Colas stuff, especially things that Pedro said, which is always interesting. I just want to plug something really quick if I can. I had an opportunity, an invite from Jim Mylock, who hosts Pod of Fame. Okay. He does an outstanding job with this podcast. He covers all sports. And he essentially talks about different players that have kind of been under the radar and if they should get Hall of Fame recognition. You know, we talk about their whole career. And it was a pleasure speaking with him last year on Dick Allen, which is a layup to me. And I think most Sox fans, that man absolutely should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. That dropped last summer. Go back and listen to it, especially with Dick Allen's birthday just recently. And Jim Mylock asked me, hey, do you want to come on? Would you be nice enough to come on to talk Robin Ventura? And boy, I mean, that was an immediate yes. You and I grew up in that era. I mean, it was Frank Thomas and it was Robin Ventura. I played a lot of third base in Little League. And when you're playing Little League, at least I did this, you look at, well, who's playing that position on the team that I love, you know, and you kind of want to emulate them and you collect their baseball cards and all that stuff. So Jim Mylock does a wonderful job hosting, very detailed oriented. It's going to drop, I believe, on Monday. I don't want to, you know, give away too much here. I don't want too many spoilers, but if you're a fan of Robin Ventura, even if you were a little bit, you know, a younger Sox fan, find some clips of Robin Ventura. He was an absolute amazing defender. He was one of my favorite White Sox players of all time. And we have a great conversation. And I think it's going to be a fabulous listen for all Sox fans when that drops.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be looking forward to that. And Robin Ventura, obviously one of my favorites growing up. It's a shame that, you know, and a lot of Sox fans' minds, the last memory they have of him is of being a pretty inept manager that didn't really want the job in the first place, that was, you know, drug in, I wouldn't say kicking and screaming into the position, but really didn't offer much outside of maybe the first 60 games of his managerial career where they were pretty good. And then he just wasn't the right fit for that position, really, for the Sox or anybody. But again, the one thing I'll say about, and we'll move on. The one thing I'll say about Robin, and I'm sure you're going to cover it in the podcast, which I'm looking forward to hearing, is one, the sweet and smooth and easy power that Robin possessed. And that as a young fan, for the first time, I realized, I go, wait a minute, he's left-handed and he plays third and throws right-handed. That kind of blew, as a young fan, yeah, that blew my mind. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah. That shouldn't be.
That defies all logic that I know at this age. Yeah, absolutely.
It kind of blew my mind. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. Great plug. And when can we hear that, Nick?
I believe it drops Monday. So that would be March 11th. And Mylock, wow, he uncovered some wonderful stats, especially when you put Ventura in the decade he primarily played in, which is the 90s. And boy, we have a really good conversation. It might change your opinion on some things. With the great Robin Ventura. And as I said to Jim, there was nothing like, you'd hear it every now and then on TV, but when you were there in person and when he came up to bat and the outstanding Nancy Faust had the Batman theme playing or Rockin' Robin, that was just cool to me as a young kid, with him coming up to bat. So
absolutely.
Since the last time we talked, Pat, there's been some cuts. 12 roster moves have been made.
We're down to 190 people in camp now.
just around the century mark, you say. That should get all evened out by the time camp breaks. We're getting there. Option to AAA Charlotte, Oscar Colas, Davis Martin, Sammy Peralta, infielder Jose Popeye Rodriguez, option to Birmingham, Cousin, Eater, reassigned to minor league camp, Kai Bush, Ellard, Hackenberg, Navarro, Caro, and Ramsey. With the moves, the White Sox have 58 players, Pat, remaining in camp, 30 pitchers, 5 catchers, 12 infielders, and 11 outfielders. That might have changed with the Brad Geller situation. But, wow, any of those names surprise you? I've got one big name there, but what has surprised you?
Shocked me. Half of those people, I don't even know who they are. They could walk into my house with their jersey on, punch me in the face, and I wouldn't even know who it was. So,
and why the punch? And why the punch? Because you didn't know who they were.
Just get my attention. I mean, I have 4 kids, a busy household. Someone needs to grab my attention. Yeah, he could punch me and tell me his name and be wearing his jersey. And saying, I just got optioned to AAA Charlotte, and I would just be in a blur, and I don't know.
Whatever happened to my, that's a lovely dress, may I have this dance? just a punch in the face is a greeting.
Nothing shocks me. Yeah. The Oscar Colas, I'm sure, is the one that stands out to me anyway. I'm sure it stands out to you. I'm hoping it gets the seasoning. I mean, we've been able to see in some the highlights and the clips of him with the power that he's shown at that level before. So that's what got us, I think, excited about him as our future right fielder. But yet again, unable to develop him at the major league level. So I think there's still some hope there with him and his skill set. Let's see if he can get some reps and really develop into a right fielder that we can maybe at some point plug in and say, this is our guy going forward. I'm not putting a lot on that. I'm not saying that's going to be a high probability, but get him the reps, get him again, continue to succeed and fail. And there's no reason right now until later on in the season to bring him up and let him see what he can do at the major league level. Unless of course there's injury along the way.
What a difference a year makes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did well for himself in spring, and I watched it last year when I was there in person. He had a couple ropes that he hit. He was swinging the bat well. Defense was a bit of an issue, and then once the season started, the lack of discipline at the plate, he just couldn't make the adjustments of what they were trying to do to him, and he looked kind of lost out there in right field several times. But we were pushed the Oscar Colas by Han and maybe other people in the organization pushed that. And Han just had to be the messenger. Of course, Sox didn't address it properly in free agency. Was it going to be Sheet? And then it was like, no, Colas. And then the big banner went up on, as they did several weeks before the season started. the big banner along 35th Street, and he was right there. He was one of those banners. You got a feeling he was going to make the team, which he did, and he didn't start, you know, in right field. Romy Gonzalez did, but he was going to be our guy, our right fielder. And of course, with matchups and stuff as a left-handed hitter, he was sad. But, you know, and then they, you know, they messed around with him and you know, we're going to drop him and some of the things that Pedro would say about him and the way he played and what they wanted to see and all these different analogies that were always kind of confusing. And did he have the support that he needed? Did he have a veteran leadership? You know, I think there's been a lot of maturity questions about Oscar Colas's personality and so forth. I think depending on who you talk to, some would have said he should have started, you know, in AAA last year for the Sox. But because, you know, I think a lack of really figuring it out as an organization, going after a proven right fielder, you know, they probably rushed Colas way too early, which is a shame. And that's, you know, there's a mental thing. There's a psychological thing. There's a confidence thing, not only with your skills, but just like your emotions, man. That's a wild ride. So this is what the leader, the great leader, Pedro Grifol had to say on Oscar Colas after the cut, which again, wasn't surprising, but, you know, tough for this kid. He had a really good camp and we are happy with his progression. He's still in the plans for this organization. He really didn't do much that was wrong. He actually, we saw improvements on every facet of his game. His pitch selection and his plate discipline is much improved. And here's one of my favorites. He was 100 miles an hour, but not fundamentally sound. He has become fundamentally sound, but a little tentative to not make mistakes. He's in the process of working himself into knowing what percentage he needs to play baseball. So I love a good Pedro Grifol quote that uses two types of, like, you know, we've got a speed, miles per hour, and we also have a percentage, you know, so it's not like he's trying. He was going 100 miles per hour. Now we want him to go maybe 70. He's using kind of two frames of measurement, which is not unusual in a Pedro Grifol quote. But that's a lot. I mean, I don't, some of it, which is not surprising to folks that, you know, listen or consume Grifol quotes, it's confusing to me, but, you know, what do you make of some of those statements by Pedro?
First of all, it made my head hurt. that was the first Pedro Grifol quote that you've read to me that actually pained me to get through the whole thing. I guess what I would decipher from this is he plays hard and he's playing fast, Luke, as Luke points out in the chat. But he's the Billy Mumphrey. He's uncontrolled enthusiasm, right?
unbridled
enthusiasm. And he needs to find, I guess the old saying that I've never really understood, but it's a lot of coach and manager speak, is play within yourself. Mm-hmm. He's playing right now. It sounds like he's playing outside of himself. He's an amoeba of some sort. And I would love for him to, whatever miles per hour or percentage he has to figure out what he is. I can't wait for Pedro to throw some metric system stuff for us at some point and using those as terms of measuring people. But I guess he's just so far out of control. He can't handle himself. He's like a kid that has, you know, like ADHD or something. He's just all over the place and he can't calm down. You need some calming down medicine.
Now, who's in charge of that? You know, like,
I have no idea.
I mean, but I get it. You might like not... a
tornado of teeth and fingernails. I mean, I don't understand.
See, that's where I, you know, because it sounds like this was an issue last year, and that was the whole boombox reference at Pedro, the very timely and current reference of a boombox where he said it was at a certain volume and we needed to be at this volume. Well, Pedro has now changed to miles per hour and percentages. So I think the next quote, like if Colas is playing well in the AAA or wherever, it might be like, he's about at a, you know, a three quarters, or he's at a full cup, you know, a measurement cup. We need him to be more at a teaspoon, you know, if he's going to go off on, you know, trying to find different ways to measure. Somebody has got to be like, who's involved in this? The outfield coach? Is there, you know, Grady Sizemore, who is involved in just the demeanor. Like, hey man, this is how you need to structure your playing. Like, you can't. I was on a volleyball, just a rec volleyball league, way back when I was in the city. It was sixes, which very difficult. This was sand volleyball, very difficult playing sixes. You got to really be disciplined. You got to know your area, where you're in charge of, you know, bump set spike, what you're trying to achieve. Well, I had one gentleman, God bless him, that just did not prescribe to that. And he was going 100 miles an hour and he'd be in the back row. And if there was a little something over the net, you better believe he was racing to the front of the net to get, not even to set up a bump set spike, but he was just going to get that ball over. He was a madman. But that's all he knew. And I didn't have the heart to like sit down and just be like, you're going to get yourself hurt. You're going to get trapped in the net. You're going to roll an ankle. You're going to hurt somebody by running all over the place. Let's work smarter, not harder. Like, stay in this spot, you know, like you, this is your world. We got, everyone else has their world. Like, is somebody talking to him after last year? Like, hey, this is what we're asking of you. This is your territory. This is what you, because it doesn't sound like he's learned anything if he's still going this fast and playing this way.
I feel like, first of all, while you were describing that, I couldn't get like a Top Gun reference out of my mind. Just you know, shades on, shirt off. Ripped to the bejesus.
Jean shorts that I cut myself, which, you know. I don't recommend that for everybody in terms
just
of what
back slapping everybody, big old man hugs.
Back slapping.
I liken Pedro Gafal to Mr. Burns when he kept telling Mattingly to shave his sideburns. Right? It's like he has no sideburns left, and he's yelling at him to continue to shave his sideburns. And I feel like Oscar's like, I don't understand what you want me to do. Like, can you please explain a little bit more clearly how you would like me to perform as a professional? So it's confounding. I would love to have a player that is excited to be there and excited to play the game. And it's one thing if he's not working hard, right? That's something to point out and say, the kid's not working hard. You know, he's not putting in the effort that he needs to put in. He sounds like he's putting in too much effort or doesn't know where to put the effort. So
it's efforts going into weird places. And it makes it look like he's out of control. So and I don't know. I know Robert worked with him this past off season and, you know, hitting wise, and I don't know if they trained together, but maybe Robert needs to step up and say, you know, hey, like, you're working too hard in this other thing, or you're out of control in this thing. Like, these are the areas that you should focus. This is how you compartmentalize it. And that maybe is difficult for a guy like Luis Robert Jr., who's at a much higher level, to try to break it down to a kind of a lost young kid. But
it seems like, you know, you're talking about a guy that's he's not there yet, but could be a superstar level talent in baseball, where everything seems to come easy to him. So the fundamentals of playing, especially the position of center field, are easy for Luis Robert. So it's hard. I would imagine, you know, not all the time, but a lot of times it's hard for guys to convey, like, why can't you just do this fundamental thing? It's so easy.
Pat, am I wrong? Am I right or wrong on this? And I'm not comparing Michael Jordan to Luis Robert Jr. at all. So stop it. But wasn't that one of the reasons
you told me to stop it? I even started.
Wasn't that one of the reasons why Michael Jordan never wanted to coach? Like, he was on such a level that we couldn't even comprehend. And he would, to your point, well, can't you just do this? And it's like, no, I'm not. Yeah. There's only one Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I thought I read that or heard that, or maybe I made that up, of why he never wanted to get into. He just didn't have the patience. He didn't know how to break it down.
Well, for him, it was like, I know you're not as skilled as me, but how come you can't be as competitive as I am?
Good point.
The drive that I have. Yeah. So I don't know if it was, I think it was that with Jordan. I could be wrong, but
that's a great point. Yeah.
But I think for, like I said, for a guy that struggles with the fundamentals, and it's obvious, I've never played at a level ever in my life of anything. So I'm not going to sit here and say I would know how to do it, but I would think there's some guys that are just fundamentally sound in everything they do. And it's hard, I guess, to teach guys even at this level, because you look at, even guys like Gavin Sheets, he'd say, how come you can't learn this skill? How come you can't turn and go back on a ball? How come you don't know how to cut off a ball that's going into the gap properly? How come you can't get a jump off the bat like I can? How come you can't read this? How come you don't understand what the pitch count is and where you should be positioning yourself in the field? And how come you haven't done your homework to know that this guy's tendency is this in this situation? Again, things I'm just regurgitating from things I've heard over years of watching.
Well, that goes back to our, you know, the previous conversation with Ventura. Like, that's a reactionary position. Yeah. Like, how do you tell somebody that doesn't have that instinct? Like, how come you couldn't react to that along the foul line or know that that was not going to be, you know, a shortstop ball? Also, they're setting yourself up for success with how you place the homework you do on a hitter. Like, where should I be? And then, you know, I'm sure Carlton Fisk had some say in that, as did, you know, the bench and certain coaches.
And Ozzy.
Ozzy, 100%. Ozzy yelling and jawing at people where they should be. And now I think third basemen have that little, like, device in their hat where they can hear what the pitch is going to be, so they know maybe where to set up closer to the foul line or whatever. But I think there is some instinct. There's just flat out, like, you have the athleticism, you have the ingrained ability to do something. And then there is the homework, the education, you know, all that. And so I don't know. That's a TBD. That's a major TBD on Oscar Colas. I would say the one that I was also a little surprised about was Jake Eder, more of where he ended up going, you know, because he was your big return from the burger trade. I mean, this is the guy where, you know, there was a nice talk up and MLB trade rumors when that deal happened, and Eder with electric stuff. And this is what the blurb from MLB trade rumors when that whole thing went down. There are certainly some concerns for any young pitcher coming off major arm surgery, and Jake Eder's 12.5% walk rate will need to be refined. However, he's already pitching in Double A, and it's feasible that he could be an option for the White Sox as soon as next season, meaning this season right here. Yeah. He might be on something of a limited workload next year, depending on how high his innings total climb this year, but he'll immediately become the system's top pitching prospect. So Jake Eder going back to Birmingham, and maybe it is, you know, hey, we just got to make sure your arm's okay. You're going to be on limited role, or it's just a short stint in Double A, and then he might be able to advance. But, you know, we want that Berger trade to hit, right?
Absolutely.
Because Berger was hitting figuratively, literally, needs that arm.
Yeah. And I think it's more of a caution type thing. Let's get him innings in the minor leagues and build up that arm strength and work some things out, because I think it's more of if he's still considered, and I don't know where he is as of right this moment, where he's, you know, in terms of prospects in the organization, if he's still number one, but if he's highly touted, then you would have to think, let's make sure we have this right for the future. And so I'm okay with that 100%. There is part of me that always thinks there's still value in a team that's in a rebuild mode to bring guys up and learn at this level. And we've seen it happen with the Lucas Giolito, that, you know, his end of his Sox career kind of petered out, but he went through that peak and valley where he was here and he's working things out at the major league level and then turned himself into a really top quality pitcher. Unfortunate for him with the most recent news with his elbow, but I'd much rather see a guy going down to Birmingham and work some things out, build some confidence again, that succeed and fail type of thing. And if it's a September call up type of situation for him later on in the year, that's fantastic. Get him some innings with some, you know, against some major league hitting. I don't really see the benefit at this point of bringing a guy, you know, along now if you don't need to.
Yeah. I hope it's not like I hope it's not a performance and a skill situation, more of like, you know, we're still concerned as you build up and all that. Speaking of like buildup and everything, you know, Kopech had his second start of the spring this past week. It was Wednesday against that feared Dodgers lineup. That was a televised game. I watched it in its entirety, and man, boy, the Dodgers have got a complete, you know, team. I think they're top of the spring training Cactus League, which again, you know, take that with a grain of salt, but They have it. They've got the goods, mm-hmm. and that was a tough lineup. Crochet handled himself pretty well when he faced the Dodgers a few weeks ago. Kopech had a fairly nice first start. We saw the plate jump around for him, and that was the case in the second start. So the plan for Kopech was to go about three innings, 45 to 55 pitches was the plan. So he was taken out in the third when he hit 55 pitches exactly, I believe. And this is how his first inning went. It was a rough one. He got behind Mookie Betts right away, ended up walking Mookie Betts, got behind Shohei Ohtani, infield single, got behind Freddie Freeman. There was a sack fly, got ahead of Chris Taylor, strikeout, got behind Max Muncy, four pitch walk, got behind Outman, and ground out to Lopez. So 26 pitches, he labored. You know, this is, again, we harp on it, man. We talk about it. It's this, the curious case of Michael Kopech and how I would have problems bringing him out of the bullpen if that's what you're going to get as his first shot at throwing. He needs almost this buffer. And I'm not even saying it's ideal as a starter. I think that's what's like, what do you do with a guy that needs a whole inning, you know, to get acclimated to what's going on? So the second inning, much better for Kopech, but this was his takeaway. I wanted to be able to throw all my pitches for strikes. I did that with everything other than the cutter. The slider ended up backing up a couple of times, but I still threw some good ones. Landed some curveballs. Fastball was a little inconsistent. Yes, it was. That thing was flying out of the zone. And that's going to be a big part of my game. Fastball command. Other than that, I was pretty comfortable with what I did, but I've got to throw more strikes. He ended his own quote perfectly. I mean, that is the theme. You have got to throw more strikes, and they have to happen immediately in at-bats.
Well, it hasn't been, to me, a complete train wreck from Michael Kopech. There has been some good things. The starts have been a little bit curious, but not surprising. And I'm at this point, you know, where we're at in spring training and going into the season. I don't think there's any doubt that this is going to sound really stupid maybe, but I don't think there's any doubt that you just make him a starter, because I'm with you. I don't think that you can bring him in a high leverage situation, you knowing that you have to get him, you know, through an inning or three outs or whatever, and not be able to pull him if he's having struggles, because I'd much rather have him have those struggles in the first inning than bring him in the high leverage sixth or seventh inning, or possibly the eighth inning, and then the game just gets away from you. So to me, I'd rather try and weather the storm, knowing you're probably going to only get 4.5, 5 innings out of him. And hopefully 2 to 3 innings of those are going to be effective. And the first inning is going to be a throwaway.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like he's a shoo-in right now. I've got an excellent Pedro Grifol quote of the week.
Well, this one hurt me. Do I need to?
That one I'll get to. It might, because it involves Kopech. And it's a really bizarre, some of the things that he says. He, you know, kind of negates himself, but there seems to be a buildup for Kopech. It seems like they want him to be a starter, but they're also saying like it's not guaranteed, although they really want it. And, you know, what do you do with him? You know, because you don't want to put your team in like a 3-0 hole every single time you start a game.
Yeah.
Especially with, you know, the lack of offense that the Sox very well could have. But is it a learning situation for Kopech? Do you say, you know what? It doesn't really matter. Like, let's let him figure some things out in April, May. You know, hopefully he's turned it around. And by that time, you know, he doesn't have the jitters out of the first inning. I don't know what to say, because he's got that electric stuff. There's no denying it. We've all seen it. We've talked about it. You know, everybody comments on it since day one. Lost some velocity over the years, but seems to be kind of regaining it a little bit. It's just that, man, it's almost like, I don't know, there is a lack of, and this is just, I go back to like high school stuff and a little bit of college when I had some really smart pitching coaches, and I could tell when a fastball was flying out of the zone as a right-handed pitcher. And it was like kind of simple stuff, simple, stupid. Okay, I'm opening up, you know, I'm flailing. I'm not, you know, I'm not like extending my back. I'm not like, my elbow isn't pointed where I'm throwing. And when you get eyes on it, which were, there was very little video back then, but I'm sure there's ridiculous amounts of video nonstop. You see, oh wow, like I'm not staying upright. You know, I'm falling off the mound this way. And look at my arm slot, like it's not consistent. I mean, in pitching, it's all about repeatable motion. It's all about how can I find something that I can do over and over, and each pitch kind of looks similar coming out of my hand and my motion. And he is going to live off his fastball. That's electric and it's got movement, but something is going on where that thing flies out of the zone. I mean, he was wild at times.
Yeah. 100% true. Something that you would think it'd be easy just to tell somebody, this is the technique that you're doing. This is, you're in doing it incorrectly. This is what you need to change. You know, obviously it's easier said than done. So, it's going to be an experiment year for him. I'm more than happy just to ride the roller coaster with Michael Kopech and see where we're at the end of the, see where we're at the end of the ride. You know, when the lap belt comes up, have you thrown up or have you just gotten so excited?
What does your picture look like? Again? You know, remember those pictures they would take? They would snap of you going down like a hill in a tunnel or something. If that's the roller coaster ride, what does your picture look like? Are you scared out of your mind? You know,
Some are empty. Some of them with me were just empty seats because I couldn't get in the roller coaster. The lap belt wouldn't go down, and I'd
that's
have to
where
be
you
removed.
Were supposed to be.
That's where you were supposed to be, you fat ass. Why don't you have a salad once in a while, and you could have rode this ride?
Oh God. Let me go back to that Dodger game, because the Sox were very patient with Yamamoto, where he couldn't find the strike zone either. And the Sox jumped all over him. You know, there were like, man, playoff aspirations for the White Sox the first three innings of that game. It's like, look at what we're doing to the Dodgers here. This is unbelievable. And then Touki Toussaint came in, and he has had a rough spring.
I happened to look when he gave up a granny to Freddie Freeman. I was in the car ride line picking up my son from daycare, and I just happened to look on the ESPN app as I'm listening on the radio, and ERA for Touki Toussaint at that point was 54. I'm not a statistician type guy. No. You know me, and like keep a single, that doesn't seem very good.
That's not good. That's not good. But again, it's
and it only went up after the grand slam. So
however, you know, when you again, like if this is a continuing trend, you have to pay attention to some of these trends, right? Like there has to be something you say with, dude, like, I don't think it's going to change that much leaving Arizona, leaving the desert air. But the Sox are in a situation where like, they need arms, you know, and maybe that's where Brad Keller came into play of like, wow, we got some guys that we thought we were going to rely on and we can't. So, you know, but I thought Touki might be in the rotation. You know, I thought he would have a shot because he sure was last season. He's got to show me a little bit more. Well, go ahead.
But our manager doesn't really care about results, right?
That's true.
He said multiple times, he sent Colas down because it wasn't results based. We'd like what he did. So maybe you look at Touki Toussaint, we can win with Touki Toussaint, even with as Luke points out, a now 59 ERA.
Well, it's the versatility. What can you bring to the team to help us win?
Yeah.
Now you can
not
be a long
skill.
Right. You can be a starter if we need in a pinch. You can be a long relief guy, Touki. So you do have versatility, but from what we're seeing right now, those aren't ways, your results aren't helping us win. So Dylan Cease through this past Thursday, he was sitting at 96, 97, but thinks he can go a little bit higher with the velocity. There was almost no offense for him and the rest of the pitchers on Thursday. This was Cease. The overall performance was pretty good. He said, I don't think it was my sharpest, but I'm very happy throwing strikes, which is good. A start like that, if I had the same exact stuff, I would be feeling good in all my starts. So you've got a rotation that, you know, Dylan Cease, I think Fetty, those are, I think, your locks. Soroka, maybe Flexen, And then you're thinking, well, you know, Crochet, Kopech. I mean, are they battling for the fifth? Is Kopech a guarantee now? I don't know. You know, I don't think Flexen has hurt himself at all. You know, nobody's had like amazing numbers. Dylan Cease is the one that keeps saying, like, I'm having the greatest spring that I ever have. I love where I'm at and I love what I'm doing. So this is a to be determined thing. I like what I see out of Leisure. Man, Jordan Leisure has been having an impressive spring. The Streenies look good. Leisure, you know, he could be somebody that really factors into, you know, the closer role. I mean, he could be a vital part of the bullpen. Again, these are guys that, like, a lot of Sox fans, I think even when the season starts, I'll be saying, like, who again is this? I'm going to have to remind myself of who these guys are, where'd they come from? But are they going to be able to, you know, factor in this year and also beyond? Like, what does our future look like? That's really what I'm going to be focusing on this season.
Well, we're coming up this month, we will have, you know, regular season ball, you know, being played. So
that's true.
As we draw nearer and nearer to the end of spring training, at what point are we looking for some of these questions to be answered, you know, from Pedro in terms of, is it by the end of next week where we're hoping to have some more clarity on who your five starters are going to be? Is that where we are at, or is it, you know, is it at the end, the absolute end of spring training? Because I would like to think that guys, again, you know, baseball players are creatures of habit, as most people are. You kind of want to know what your role is going to be. I understand maybe the motivation that's behind the Kopech. We don't know if you're going to be a starter, where you're going to be at. Maybe it's maybe they're looking at to motivate him to perform better to be that starter. Maybe I get that a little bit, but I also would like to think that these guys would want to know where they're going to be at, you know, coming up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I would say so. Opening day is the 28th of March. And I mean, I'm looking at Friday, the 22nd, like heading into that weekend, you know, maybe you're going to see some of the final cuts of, okay, this is where, you know, kind of our team is at. It might be a little bit later in the game. I think they're going to wait some time here because nobody's really emerging. I like DeJong and Lopez. Those are locks up the middle. Lopez has been having a nice spring. DeJong and Lopez can play a lot of different positions. I've been liking Fletcher in right field. I mean, he's not offensively a juggernaut. Very few are with this White Sox right now, if you're going to look at those spring sample sizes. Vaughn has had a ridiculously quiet spring. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, I told you. And it's starting to get a little, you know, concerning here. I mean, this is a big year for Vaughn. I mean, Luis Robert Jr.'s had a quiet, you know, very quiet spring. And maybe he's earned the right to say, I can have a quiet spring because you've seen what I now can do in the regular season.
Yeah. And again, with Robert, I wouldn't put too much stock in it. With Vaughn, I would say maybe we need another Paul Konerko video to come out.
Well, Paul needs to do what Tomy was doing. Paul needs to get the uniform back on and get right there in the dugout and be a shadow, be right in his hip on how Vaughn, just everything.
Do you think it's secretly like we could get a Vaughn jersey for Pauly and he just comes in disguise and comes into hit once in a while?
Oh my gosh, you'd figure that out immediately. I think at Paul's age, he still probably would be able to put up better numbers and he might be able to beat Vaughn in a foot race.
I don't know. That's
Paul that looks active. I've seen pictures, you know, I've seen pictures of him recently. He looks good. I hope I see him while I'm out there in Arizona. I hope Konerko was walking around having a sandwich or something.
Sandwich by himself out in the outfield grass.
Great food here at Camelback Ranch. Great food. I come here for the sandwiches. I hope that's the case. All right, before we say goodbye, we've got our Pedro Grifol quote of the week. This is on Michael Kopech, and Grifol has talked highly about Kopech's stuff and what he has done physically, you know, this spring, but it does not seem to be a foregone conclusion that he will be in that starting rotation, and I think that has been communicated to Michael Kopech. This is Pedro Grifol. It's just too early for that, Grifol said Wednesday when asked if Kopech was more or less set as a starter. But yeah, he's getting built up to be one of our starters. But again, I know we want to talk about it, but I think in about another week, we'll talk about it. Right now, everybody is just competing. We're building him up. So this one got me all kind of twisted mentally of what they're talking about, when they're going to talk about it, and how it's too early, but it's not early enough. What I'm taking away from all of that is I don't think they know, and Kopech needs to keep battling.
I would suggest to Pedro, you go to the Bill Belichick School of Press Conference. Just get up there and go, I think we've already addressed that. That'll play itself out. And say as little as humanly possible, because the more he talks, the more he's like a hamster on a wheel. It's craziness. So thank you for that. Now I'm going to have to, I don't know, do something to feel better about myself.
I will leave you with that. So next week, we're looking at St. Patrick's Day, Pat, your name's day. Are we set to record? Do you have some sort of like Reuben sandwich event or some sort of corned beef?
Reuben sandwich event?
Yeah, are you?
I am not in a Reuben sandwich eating contest, if that's what you're suggesting.
No,
I'm still planning on recording on St. Patrick's Day. I don't I don't currently have any parades that I've been asked to join or be a part of. So
I'll have a Guinness NA available, and we'll do a St. Patrick's Day kind of show, I guess.
We're going to duels. You can have no duels. That's a wonderful NA.
I've heard about it.
People are talking about it.
People are talking about it. Pat, I got to thank everybody for jumping in on this Saturday morning. Some great stuff. Thank you for, consuming this live. I know not everybody has the opportunity. Thank you for listening. The audio, if you get a chance, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Join us live. These are a lot of fun. And, as the season gets closer, more decisions are being made. There's a ton of White Sox content out there, man. There's some great people doing some wonderful stuff. So just appreciate that. We're an opportunity. You give us a shot and pass it along to other Sox fans in your life. We do appreciate it. Pat, always a pleasure, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Catch all the action. It's good to see you. Enjoy Arizona.
Thank you so much. For Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.